Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss different issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling radio shy and you would like to ask a question to me or my guest, just write me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to make a couple of announcements. I would like to remind people that starting next week, this is the end of February, next week our show moves from Sunday evening to Monday evening, and it's going to be an hour earlier. I know a lot of people are really tied up on Sunday nights, and it's hard for them to listen, so you have to listen later in the week. But this way, I won't have to be tied up on Sunday nights, so it's better for me too. So that's why we're changing the time to coordinate with our regular guests, Suzette Hinton, Vernon, and Dr. Brian Hooper, and Monday night was the night that everybody could coordinate the best. So I will be making announcements on our newsletters, my blog page, also, you know, and any other communications that I have with people. So listen for us starting next Monday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Also, people have been writing to me in the last few weeks asking about when our new Healing Weekend is going to take place, and it's going to be at the end of September and here in Philadelphia. So as I progress with getting the hotel and getting all the arrangements made, I will keep everybody posted. I'll announce it in my upcoming newsletter. So that's what you would like to do, and join me and some of the most wonderful, incredible women you'll ever meet in your whole life, then get ready to come and get ready to heal, or at least to start healing. So those are my two major announcements, and I'd like to not waste any more of my time without introducing my wonderful guest, Kathy Holguin. Thank you so much for joining me again, Kathy. I love when you come here.
Thank you so much.
Because you are so healing.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie.
Well, I really love when you're here because it sheds such a light on to so many people. And I've known Kathy now about, what is it, almost 2 years, is it?
Yeah,
about a year and a half.
Two and a half, yeah.
Yep, so Kathy lives in Orange County in California. So I've been lucky enough to actually meet her two times in person, including when we were together in September at our healing weekend in Los Angeles. And Kathy is an incredible therapist. And she works as a family therapist, but she specializes in straight wives because Kathy herself was a straight wife. And so she certainly can be very empathetic, understanding, and healing as a therapist, because one of the things I'd like to discuss with you for a few moments, Kathy, I don't know if this was your experience or not, you know, when you were going through life and before you went and became a family therapist, but I think it's just so hard to find people in the counseling profession who can really understand what we're going through. Have you found that to be the case?
Yes, I have, because it seems that oftentimes therapists will focus on somebody struggling with same-sex attraction, and those of us who are going through the betrayal, feelings of betrayal and loss, and just feeling so like we don't know what's real and what's not real, it's like nobody really seems to get that dynamic, because it's really not so much in the books. There's not a lot of research on it. There's more and more coming out now about a real documented, where there's empirical evidence, and it's called betrayal trauma. And it is a very specific trauma, and it's very, very difficult to explain if you haven't been through it or you don't have any connection with what it feels like. Even as a clinical therapist, you don't always have to go through what other people are going through, but to have some baseline is really important. So I'm constantly educating my friends and other therapists that I know about this particular type of trauma and why it's unique and why it really deserves special attention.
I think the problem with many therapists is, first of all, they really don't have a full understanding of this whole situation. And, you know, they look to make the situation, well, it takes two to make a marriage. It takes two to tango. And it will take two to untangle this. So you're both going to have to work at it. Which would be the kind of approach you might take when you're dealing with a straight couple. That's, both partners are straight. But when you have a gay, you know, a gay member of this couple, the husband is gay, you cannot use that kind of thinking or strategy because you're trying to make something work that's not a working possibility.
Exactly.
In,
it's like
I would say 99% of the cases. I mean, I know I hear stories, well, we made it work and we're making it work. I mean, I don't actually hear them personally. I mean, maybe I hear one or two every 10 years. But that should be the rare exception to this rule. The rule is these marriages don't work just based on what a marriage is. I mean, by definition alone.
Correct. It's hard enough to repair a marriage when you have two partners who are heterosexual and trust has been broken and one person has been betrayed. When you have an issue that, you know, a one-time betrayal or something like that. But when you've betrayed somebody from the minute you met them and you never were forthcoming about who you are down to the intrinsic value of who you are, you're the core of who you are, your sexuality, and you've been living a lie with this partner because you don't want to risk losing the relationship, risk losing what you're getting out of the relationship, risk losing that person who is loving and nurturing to you and trying to meet your needs. They don't want to risk losing that. And so there was a really good reason why they didn't let you in on this piece of who they are. And so they're not very likely to let you in later as well. So, yeah, when you're dealing with it in a therapeutic setting, it's a whole different playing field, completely different playing field, because you have different trajectories, right? He's concerned about hiding his secret in therapy, and she doesn't know if she's coming or going, typically, and is questions her own sanity, questions the very, the very real experiences she's having. She tends to minimize them, or there's so many different hoops that you go through. And you really think by the time you come in that you're going crazy.
Right. And it's such a distortion of marriage because, you know, I say that there are some gay husbands who are nice to their wives in the beginning. They're not abusive from the beginning, or I don't think almost all of us would marry them. So mm-hmm. A lot of them are charming, and a lot of them have this pre-narcissistic behavior of always acting so, you know, endearing. You know, they have that personality that can draw you in. And some of them really do love their wives to the best of their ability. But as I always tell women, that's not what you need. You don't need to be living with your brother or with an uncle or cousin. A husband mm-hmm. is a totally different dynamic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's funny because it's like, how capable is a narcissist really of loving anybody but themselves, right? So
exactly.
I tend to look at it from the perspective of empowering women to decide what it is they need from a relationship, what it is they want from their marriage, and are their needs being met? If their needs are not being met, then let's take a closer look at that and figure out how you can get your needs met. And typically, someone who is narcissist or, of course, the sociopath, you know, that takes it one step further, they're not capable of meeting anybody else's needs. And so whether they're willing to come forth or not, whether you have the evidence that you know for sure that they're acting out or that they're gay, all of that is important, but it takes a back seat to you really deciding what kind of a relationship do you want and what's important for you, what's important for your kids and for your own sanity and for your own well-being. So
people who have narcissistic, antisocial, borderline personalities are all bad risks to be involved with. And mm-hmm. My perception is of this whole situation after 30-some years of doing this, you know, I understand that women have been rejected for year in and year out and how low they feel about themselves. But building yourself up doesn't mean that you can run out right away and start, you know, getting involved right after your marriage ends. You really have to take time and see a therapist or go through some self-healing kinds of exercises for the year. Because if you weren't mm-hmm. broken when you got into the marriage, by the time it's over, you will be broken in one way or another. You know, a lot of us came from broken families, so we came from situations that weren't norms. There were no norms. We only had the abnorms. So by walking into a marriage with a gay husband, actually it was better for a lot of people than their home situation they were living in if they came from families where there was abuse or drug abuse or alcoholism, mental illness. You know, that a nice man willing to give his life to you seemed like a good bet, and you didn't look too far or didn't understand enough if you were younger. But now that you're going past this and you're moving on, you have to really understand why you would jump at a chance to be with the wrong person rather than be alone and try to rebuild your life. So I think that therapy is a really important next step when a marriage ends. Do you feel the same way?
I absolutely. And I try to encourage my clients that let's look at this as a time that you finally have the gift of giving to yourself. You have the gift of really finding out who you are, what's important to you, where your injury is, you know, where that woundedness is, what part of your development maybe didn't get as much attention. You know, if you look at the research and you look at like attachment theory and things like that, you know, children have very, very specific needs, emotional needs that need to get recognized, right? And so as children express their needs, they need to be able to feel safe to fully emotionally experience all the things that are going on for them in an environment where a parent is feeling an ability to comfort the child, you know, to offer comfort when it's appropriate. And then the child reacts feeling loved. They're able to trust. They feel safe. If any of the, and that's what causes a secure attachment. So if any of those steps are broken, then as children, we grow up not knowing what's really safe, who we really can trust. And so we do the best we can to trust people that seem like they're safe. But if we haven't had an experience when we're young to really be able to feel that we truly can trust ourselves and what's going on intrinsically inside, then it's really hard to trust ourself and our own reactions later, especially if we're in a relationship that's, you know, emotionally unsupportive and isolating. So definitely that work needs to be done so that you can attach to somebody from a secure perspective later. When you do consider going to another relationship, if in fact that's something you choose.
And I think a lot of these issues that come up in our marriages have a lot of residual scarring, you know, for years to come. I know that when I started my relationship with my current soulmate of 21 years, I had a lot of issues. And it had been a number of years since I ended my marriage before I was ready to even go out and meet somebody. But I had all those issues keep repeating themselves with him, even though he gave me no reason to have them.
Yeah.
But because I had so many from the past that, you know, if he would say something or I'd be waiting for him to call me and he didn't call, not because he didn't want to, he just totally forgot or he was busy at work or something would happen. You know, right away I'm thinking, oh, he's cheating on me. Oh, he doesn't really want me. You know, all these, you know, ridiculous things. I remember one day, you know, I said to him, you know, I'm really mad at you. And he said, well, why? I said, can't you figure it out? You know, here I am making this into the new game of you should. He said to me, do you think I'm a mind reader? I don't know what you're thinking. And, you know, like I say, I was still not healed enough at that point to realize, you know what, I really got to get a little more healed before I can ever have a safe, secure relationship, because I was still doubting everything. Because
yeah.
I was still doubting myself. And that's really what it comes down to. No matter how happy you become or I've started my new life, if you don't deal with these issues, I can guarantee you they will be part of your new relationship, will be your baggage that you're taking into it. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm laughing because, you know, I think those of us who come out of relationships with gay men, especially if we don't know that they're gay, right? We get into we look at other men and, you know, we expect all men to act like, I call them girl men. We expect other men to act like women because typically we were married to men who really did act a lot more like women, right?
Definitely.
And yeah, I mean, I don't mean that to be like, you know, disrespectful to women, but women definitely have their characteristics that they bring into relationships. So when I met a heterosexual man, I was blown away at how he truly acted like as I perceived a male would act, right? He was very very protective of me in terms of my safety, really very caretaking, very sexual, very, you know. And I was so blown away because I was so used to being with a man who didn't have those same qualities. So, yeah, it makes me laugh because had I not done my own healing and my own work and become centered and happy with who I was, I would not have been able to receive him, a heterosexual man, because there would have been so many things that would have been intimidating to me. And so I had to do that work so that I could move forward, definitely.
Right, and it takes a lot of work. And once again, mm-hmm. even as trained counselors or therapists, you know, people, we still have to get help also. I mean, you know, it's not that we can, you know, so it's like doctor, heal yourself. Sometimes it takes some outside input. So you never have to feel embarrassed or ashamed. You know, people think, well, if I go to a counselor, I go to a therapist, you know, it shows that I'm weak. No, it shows that you need some extra help in getting back to who you are. I also say these marriages wipe out who you are. I mean, I became a totally different person who I didn't even recognize. And it was somebody who I didn't like. You know, I was beaten down. And, you know, once again, not every gay husband's different, but there are a lot of them that are like mine. I used to say, and I still say to people, he used to shout me down to shut me up, and that's how he controlled me, because he was very controlling. And some of these men are very controlling because they're so afraid their secret's going to get out that they have to control everything you're doing, everyone you're talking to. They alienate everyone around you. I think my ex-husband really went out of his way to make sure that my family hated him so they wouldn't want to come around. And they would tell me, we don't want to come around him. Every time we come to your house, he's sitting and fighting and arguing with you. Over nothing, he would start an argument just because he didn't want people coming there. And I gave in because, you know, it's easier for me. I don't have a confrontational type of personality. So I just, you know, shut myself out, and that was the end of it. So I can see how women who come who aren't that strong, and I was strong when I went into that marriage, but it didn't take them long to beat me down. So what do you do with a woman who has no strength to start with? And I see it all the time. I get letters every day. I mean, I literally sit here and cry with some of these women. Or cry for them, because when I read how sad their stories are and how hopeless they feel, how trapped they feel, it makes me think I would just like to, you know, open up one big straight wife shelter for runaway straight wives, you know, so they can put their lives back together. But some of them are so without resources, family support. A lot of these guys do their best to alienate them from their families so that, you know, they can, what I call it, gay light them. Make people think, you know, that you're crazy or things you're saying are crazy. Because some of these guys just don't have the decency to do what it takes to be a decent human being. And that's not a condemnation on certainly all gay husbands. I work with some gay husbands who really do try, you know, to do the right thing. But the overwhelming majority, they don't want to take the responsibility. And, you know, there's these gay organizations out there telling them, do not tell your wife that you are gay because it will cost you more in court. So that just makes them go, you know, into a bigger closet than they're already in when it comes to you. So there's so many complexities to this issue. You know, I was wondering, you're doing workshops now in Orange County. I was really excited to hear you were doing them because I've gotten such wonderful feedback from some people who have been attending them. So can you talk a little bit about those workshops for people? What you're doing.
I have different workshops. Right now we're in a 10-week workshop. Anyone can come at any point within the 10 weeks. But it's called Know Yourself, Understand Your Relationships. And what we're teaching is how we grew up from our family of origin, what was modeled for us, and we learned how we love other people and how we attach to other people and who we're attracted to based on what we witnessed when we were kids. And so we have different, there are different attachments that we make to other people. And so what we do is there are five different levels or characteristics of attachment. Like there's an avoider, there's a pleaser, there's a vacillator, and there's a victim and a controller. So those are the five. And what we do is we go over what's involved in each of those. Yes.
Can you repeat that one more time?
There's an avoider.
Avoider.
A pleaser. A pleaser.
A pleaser.
A vacillator.
Vacillator. Good.
A controller.
Mm-hmm.
And a victim.
Okay, so those are the five different types, you would say?
Yes. And so what happens is within each of those descriptors, we learn what created somebody to be an avoider, right? What are some things that we say to ourselves on a daily basis that basically minimize who we are? And so we learn sort of where we fit within some of those descriptors. And then as we learn those things about ourselves, we understand what the dynamics are in our relationships. And typically, those characteristics will follow through not only in our marriages, but also with the people we love, with our family. We sort of take on one of those descriptors, and that's sort of how we live our lives. And what's interesting about it is, like controllers and victims, they'll find each other almost always. Oh. Avoiders and pleasers will find each other. And so what we're trying to do within our workshop is we teach these concepts, and then we help people understand that you can change up, we call it the dance, right? So like if I'm doing the cha-cha and my husband is doing the tango, right, we're going to step on each other's toes. And so what we do is we try to help both of us come on a more common ground and understand each other's dance steps so that we can be more symbiotic. Now, this works when you're taking a close look at yourself. When you're married to a man who is incessantly lying to you about the core self of being of who he is, these concepts aren't going to be so applicable. But they are applicable to you as an individual when you're trying to figure out your own dynamics and get healthy and move forward. So,
well, I think that's so important that this is a different aspect of getting healed, of knowing yourself, of knowing what you've been through in your life experiences that have brought you to the place you are. You know, one of the things I always said, Kathy, that if I had $1 million and I could retire and do whatever I wanted to do, I would sit and I would just keep studying self-esteem. I always find that, like, just so amazing what brings about good self-esteem versus bad self-esteem, positive versus negative. And when I was little growing up, I was never one of those pretty girls. I was always gawky, chunky. Mm-hmm. I was the last one picked on the sports teams. I had some friends, but, I wasn't one of the real popular girls when I was growing up. And I always felt so bad about myself, for all of those reasons. But what was so interesting to me is, like, when I would see girls and I would say, man, they have it so good. But as I got older, and, of course, once I started going, doing counseling, and I started to meet unbelievably gorgeous women who had much lower self-esteem than I had.
Yeah.
And I realized it has very little to do with how you look on the outside. It's all from within.
Yes.
That you can be the most beautiful woman in the world, but you still have the same low self-esteem that I have.
Yep.
I guess would it be selfish to say it made me feel better?
No, absolutely not.
No, I'm only kidding.
No, because it's comforting, It's like, it all kind of goes back. I like to use this analogy. It all goes back to, and this is like speaking to the self-esteem part. It all kind of goes back to, if you think about your life, how were you comforted as a kid? Who comforted you? And what did those experiences look like? When you were hurt and isolated and lonely and sad, or you'd been beat up on the playground or whatever, and you came home, what did that comfort look like? Was there any person there to comfort you? Were you isolated? Were you left to fend for yourself? All of the answers to those questions will point to what you learned about yourself in terms of how important you were and how important your needs are. So that's why you can have a, like you talk about, like a Barbie doll little girl who, is teased about something when she's 6 or 7 years old. She comes home and there's nobody there to comfort her. So what is she learning about herself? She's learning that her needs and her little wounded heart doesn't matter. So that's the message she's learning by not having anybody there to comfort her. or you have somebody in an abusive situation, or, you know, so many different situations. It's the message you give yourself. And what we do in therapy is we go back to some of those early experiences and we release that shame. We help you have empathy and compassion for yourself so that you can see kind of from a different adult perspective that there was nothing wrong with you. There might have been some things wrong with the environment, but you had no responsibility in that. And so your self-esteem begins to grow as you begin to have more empathy for yourself and for that little girl that didn't get what she needed.
And now I'd like to bring up, you know, while we're on this topic, something that I know is a concern for me, and I know that a lot of people say this is a concern for them, so I'd like to get your opinion just on the same, going down the same road. I truly believe that, you know, in a perfect world, it's always wonderful to have a happy family where children grow up so they don't have all of these issues going on, where you can feel safe and secure and there's somebody to, you know, run home to, and kiss the boo-boos, and make you feel better about yourself. But when you have a marriage where there's a gay husband and there's this continual inner conflict and outer conflict, and the children are seeing this, I know that women keep saying to me, my kids don't know. But I knew. I knew when my parents were unhappy. I mean, and they could say all they want, well, we smiled and you didn't, we never fought in front of you. Well, don't you think I heard them fighting when I went to bed at night? And I think that women really underestimate the power of what's going on in their home, that they're protecting their children, and that's why they have to stay. And, you know, growing up with a mother who's unhappy all the time or who's feeling inadequate or who can't get out of bed because she's depressed, I mean, this isn't helping children. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I, from a personal perspective and a professional perspective, I work with a lot of kids that are in this situation, and they may not know the nuances, but they know that there's so much anxiety going on within the home that most of the time they'll start picking up that anxiety, and you've got a lot of kids that deal with major anxiety issues, trouble concentrating, trouble making friends, because they're what you're teaching them is that you is that they can't trust themselves in terms of their own intuition when something is off or something is amiss. So what you want to teach kids is that something is off, something is not quite right, and I want you to trust what's going on inside your heart and in your psyche so that you can make safe decisions for yourself as an adult. So I personally think that the best gift you can give your kids is the gift of honesty. And that doesn't mean to tell kids, it would have to be, it's age appropriate, but and it's not tell the kids, you know, everything, but to advocate on behalf of yourself and on behalf of what is in the your best interest for your own emotional well-being is teaching your kids how to do the exact same thing. So you're modeling for your kids now so that later they can make healthy decisions even though they may be difficult. So absolutely, these kids, they really struggle because they know intrinsically something is not right, but they don't trust themselves enough. And they believe the parents, if the parents are sort of faking it till they make it kind of thing, then they are trusting that somehow, some way, I'm misinterpreting this. Something's or they're looking at it and thinking, oh, this is just normal. This is just the way marriage is. This is the way life is. And there's no other, you know, there's no other option. And so they're going to replicate that when they're older as well.
I think that's part of it, but also what I see a lot of happening is that children internalize this and blame themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They blame themselves for their parents' unhappiness. And a lot of times they are the ones who are stuck in the middle because a lot of times our kids know before we do. You know, they're just so sophisticated today where they can, you know, read what's going on the computers. They look at your dad's cell phone. So many of the kids that I work with tell me that they knew, and then what do they do with that information? You know, they don't want to feel like it's because of them the marriage broke up. They don't want to have to feel like they're going to destroy their mother. You know, they don't want to have come from a broken family. Yep. So they have to live with this internal guilt that really eats them alive and causes them to act out in so many ways. I was just with a young lady the other day who, you know, she knew about her dad doing stuff. And she said, I always felt I had to keep my mouth shut because, you know, I didn't want to destroy my family. And then it would be my fault if I went back and said anything. And she's lived with this for the last 25 years. And I think it's just so sad.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
You know, it's one thing when you don't know, but when you're staying there and you do know. And, I mean, and I always say, like, they say secrets destroy families. I really do believe that's the case.
Yeah.
You know,
I do too.
You can tell your children, as you said, in an age-appropriate way, but we're giving them a really bad message when we're not telling them the truth of why the marriage is breaking up. Because I see that backfire for so many women, you know, because then the fathers are telling the children, well, I didn't want to break up the marriage, it was your mother.
Yeah.
And then they're warning the mother, don't you dare tell the kids why we broke up. You know, it's like so ridiculous, like a game. And
yeah,
it's destroying people.
By the time I see moms especially, they come to me and they just need help with the language, right? They just need help with how do I tell my kids? And that's I had to do that, so that's really helpful. And it can be just as simple as I'm willing to tell you as much as you need to know when you need to know it, but for now, you need to understand that I can no longer trust Dad. And because I can't trust somebody, I can't be married to somebody that I can't trust. And, you know, kids get that. And then in my case, it took many years for my kids to slowly ask, well, why couldn't you trust him? Well, what was really going on, you know? And it's a process. It's not just very black and white. One minute, you know, you're here and it's like a checkoff list, right? It isn't like that. It's, you have to walk through it together you have to take it little pieces at a time, but it is very possible to tell kids. Kids are really resilient if they know that they can trust their intuition. And they can trust themselves. You want to teach them that they can trust themselves. And the best way to do that is to walk in truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always like to, you know, bring this up whenever I can put it in, because I know from my own situation, I came from a broken home that was far more broken when I lived in it than after it broke up. I mean, it was very, very broken. But, you know, when I got my divorce from my gay husband, I love this card that my mother sent me, and I like to read it because we always have new listeners, and I don't know if you've heard it before, so I'll tell you. But she sent me a beautiful card and said, "Dearest Bonnie, this is not the funny card I was going to send, but instead one the color of sunshine, the sun bringing to mind whatever happens to people, joys, tears, health, sickness, weddings, or divorce. The sun always rises, bringing new life, spirit, and vitality to the world. Remembering the words on this joyous occasion from the first time, those occasions change, and we do the best we can to look ahead to brighter days and happier times. Divorce is a finality, and it's a conclusion to a mistake. You should be proud that you brought this to an end from a legal standpoint and a morale standpoint. Your children will someday admire your decision as to not divorce, but know of his life would lower their feelings of strength. They see in you and count on you for their future. Someday they may have to accept his failings, but never your weakness. My life in limbo all these years to suit your father's fancy has been unproductive, restrictive, and foolish on my part. Now it's too late to recapture my years, but I'm comforted in the fact that you face a free new road. Enjoy your freedom and strength. I am proud of you always. Love, Mommy." And, you know, I think that kind of sums it up for everyone. You know, divorce is never what you go into a marriage expecting. But as my mom said, you know, she had a terrible marriage to my dad, who was a straight man. He wasn't gay, but he was a total sociopathic, psychopathic, whatever. But the point is that he tortured her for many years, even after the marriage was over, because he wouldn't give her a divorce. He wouldn't let her move on. So she was so happy when I had the strength to do what I had to do rather than sit and linger like she did for years and not, you know, have the strength to fight back. So
yeah.
Even though, you know, it takes courage, because making it on your own when you're a single parent is never easy. I never underestimate that. Tell people how many children you have, Kathy.
I have 5 children.
You have an army.
Yeah, and they were all very close together. I had a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and 2-year-old twins. Sorry, 2-year-old and 2 newborns when my twins were born. So I had 5 under the age of 6. So it was insane, really insane. And I did it, you know, like most of us, I did it pretty much on my own, because he was always preoccupied. And, you know, I'll never forget, Bonnie, I think I've told you this before, I'm home with all these kids, right? And he came home one day and said, oh, I was looking in the newspaper for part-time jobs for you. But you know what is that I bought it. You know, I actually was like, well, maybe I could fit it in, you know.
Mm-hmm. With 5 kids under the age of 6.
Yeah. So that shows you how out of perspective I was with my own life and my own abilities as well. So.
Right, because, you know, they know how to hit you, you know, where you're vulnerable. I know, you know, every time my ex-husband would hit me, it would be questioning my ability as a mother. And since I couldn't believe I had no ability as a wife, then I thought, well, maybe he's right. Maybe I wouldn't be a competent mother. Although I hung tightly to my children, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm trying to do everything right. Why is he always saying I'm doing everything wrong? And how would I know? I was a new mother. I had 2 babies when we split up practically. So I didn't know what was right and what was wrong. I was just doing instinctually what I thought was right. But he was the biggest of the 3 babies. He took up more of my time. And you know what? I don't know about yours, but my kids could never be sick unless he was sick too. You know, if my kids were sick, he would say, oh, I sprained my back, I hurt my back. You know, he could never let anybody just be sick on their own without him having to out-sick them. You know, always, once again, grabbing attention, grabbing needs. And when you were talking earlier about, you know, narcissists having to be fed, it's kind of like that movie, Little House of Horrors. That's the house I lived in. A Little Shop of Horrors. Well, it's close enough.
All right.
Anyway, they had that. Mine was a Little House of Horrors. They had that, you know, big plant that kept, you know, eating people, saying, feed me, feed me, feed me.
Yeah.
And that's how it is with these guys. You have to keep feeding them because they're only interested in you as long as you can keep feeding them. And if you're not feeding them anymore, they're going to find somebody else to do it. They just suck every ounce of energy out of you, right?
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, for people who are listening, that one of the things that describes borderline personality is somebody that has no core sense of self. My ex-husband would talk about that he said, I feel like the inside of me is like a cylinder, like nothing sticks. Nothing good I do sticks, nothing, you know, and all nothing bad I do sticks either, right? That's like the sociopath part, right? It's like there's no conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good for people, I think women especially, to know that if they're married to somebody who, and they become very needy, right? Because nothing sticks. So there's this constant need to be fed, this constant need to be affirmed and to compliment it and whatever, right? And so you literally are just exhausted because you're trying to feed this empty cylinder where nothing ever really plays, nothing ever sticks. It's very, very sad. It's a sad way to live your life, and it's very, very hard on the loved ones and family. I wanted to also just address the whole divorce issue, Bonnie, too, because I think, you know, as you know, I'm a Christian, too, and in my ex-husband was a pastor for 20-some years,
at a very well-known church, a very, very large church in our area. So I get it that divorce was never, ever on my radar. It was never in my vocabulary. My parents are 75 years old, and they're still married today. They've been married over 50 years. It was just not in my culture or on my radar to be divorced. And so it literally took me 4 years to divorce my husband because I finally separated from him because I was worried about the safety of my kids. I was afraid that he would befriend a pedophile or somebody that would be attracted to children as well as their other interests, right? So I finally separated from him, really more because I was afraid for my kids' safety. I was afraid someone might abduct my kids or something, or that he would maybe say, you know, drop that he has five kids, right? So he also worked with children, which was also a concern because I thought, anyway, that's a whole other thing. But so I finally separated, not with the intention of divorcing, because at that time I couldn't even have imagined that being in my future. But I realized that I had to protect them against outside perpetrators because I have no idea what they're capable of. But I also had to protect my own physical well-being. And so when I left and I asked him to move out, it wasn't with the intention of divorce. And then another year went by and I realized more, I learned more, I realized what I was really dealing with. And finally I filed for divorce and then it was finalized several years later. Because my thinking was, well, he'll finally get it, you know. He'll snap out now that he knows there's no secret here, right? So it took a long time for me to accomplish that for myself. So I guess my encouragement is that if you're not at the place where you that could even fathom getting divorced for whatever reason, really look at it in terms of baby steps and just look at what could I do now that will put me in a better position or that I can feel safer or that I can actually think straight, right? It can be a trial separation. It can be moving in with your parents for a little while. You know, there's a lot of
absolutely.
It doesn't have to be so black and white. You have to make that final decision and move on, right? Because I think this is a trauma and it's baby steps sometimes.
And I think that's the whole thing. You don't have to make any hardcore decisions, but, you know, here's where my starting point is with women. And I'm, you know, I don't like to waste a lot of people's time. You know, I like to cut to the chase. And so my first thing I say to women is this: do you have a daughter? If they don't have a daughter, I say, do you have a sister, best friend? Yes. And let's say they sat with you and they said, I want to tell you all about my husband. And they told me the same things, and they told you the same things you're telling me now. What would your advice be? I have never had a woman say to me, I would advise them, stick with it, it's going to get better. They all say, I would tell them to run. So it's not like it's surprising you that you're in a bad situation. You know you are. But you don't have to feel obligated to stay in it. You know, there's all these fears that come up and all these, you know, I understand it. Believe me, I've been there, done it. But you have to salvage whatever years you have left. You know, because life is really very short. You know, you don't have any guarantees that you're going to be around from here, except if you're living with somebody who you hate, then it's going to be 50 years you're going to live. So that's the only guarantee.
Yeah.
You're never going to die.
Right.
You're always going to be stuck with somebody horrible. But you have to always salvage whatever good years you have. Life is a gift, and you can't just throw it away like that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And along those lines, I think that I look at it from the perspective of what is your freedom worth to you, right? For me, my freedom cost me, you know, my home. It cost me, you know, a lot of, it did. It had a very, very high price tag attached to it. But I am telling you, Bonnie, when I was living in that one-bedroom apartment with my three of my five kids, and I had their respect, I had their love, I had their appreciation, I had the respect of others who knew, who found out and knew what I was dealing with, who came alongside of me and were, I gave them the opportunity to love me and comfort me. My life was so full and so beautiful that it didn't matter what it cost me, because my freedom and my ability to be healthy again and to find those pieces of myself that I had lost, I mean, it was worth everything it cost me. And you know what the bottom line is? I got it all back. You know, 10 years later, I have it back. I have a beautiful home. I have a great husband. You know, so it's not the end of the road. And this is not all that's meant for you.
No, and, you know, once again, I also say that I understand if people go through a tough time and they get help and their doctors recommend, well, you know, maybe you need some medication to get you through this. But you can't make that your lifestyle. You know, if you want to do the medication, do it for the emergency, but don't let it suppress you into keeping you into a place where you don't belong to start with.
Right.
You know, I can't stand when I have to hear that women have to alter their personalities in order to stay with their gay husbands. I find something very, you know, rotten about that. It just makes me ill when I think about having to alter your state of mind so you can live with somebody who's abusive to you. That makes the least sense of anything. You know, it's like Kathy says, you don't have to make a decision today, I have to get a divorce. You just have to have a decision, I have to get away from this. And then you can say it to yourself, let me try it as a trial, let's see if we can separate. But, you know, I agree with you. When I split with my ex, I ended up, you know, I had a GED back then. I didn't have any education. And I had a sick child who, you know, sadly, you know, died when he was 23 from the disease he was born with, but he was constantly in hospitals. And there was no way I could work and be with, you know, two babies and running to hospitals.
Yeah.
And I was on welfare for 3 years. That's when I used to sneak to college because I said, I'm not going to live like this. But even though I had nothing with them, and I mean literally nothing, we lived day to day. I thankfully had a family that helped me the best they could. They didn't have money either, but they gave me whatever they could. But I'll tell you one thing, as bad as it was a hell of a lot better than walking on those broken eggshells, cutting my feet every day, wondering when I was going to say the wrong thing that's going to make him infuriate and start screaming and yelling, and having the kids have to get nervous when he was yelling. And, you know, it was just a nightmare. And so even though I had nothing, I felt good because I had peace of mind. And that's something you cannot buy for any amount of money. Would you agree with that?
Right. Yes, absolutely. Yes, yes. And it's funny because when you finally sort of give yourself the space and you're away from it, whether you're trial separated or you're living with your parents, which is what I did. I had to move in with my parents with my five children, and we were sleeping on the floors. And but you know what?
Right.
I was able to think clearly. The fog cleared. I had to tell my parents what was going on. I had hidden it for many years. And just being able to let people in to my own personal hell was such a relief. It was so freeing because people wanted
it is.
Help. People, you know, it does take a village. And
it certainly did.
Even if you don't have people in your life that are close, because a lot of these guys do isolate, you know, you have Bonnie, you have Book Network, you have me in Southern California, you know, and I do a lot of stuff with other people from all around the country, you know, with that I'm there to support them, you know. If they can't afford it, then I'm willing to, like, donate some of my time. And you know, you're not alone, and you don't have to stay alone, and you don't have to stay isolated. And I am telling you, these women that I meet, Bonnie, and you can attest to this, they are the most incredible women. They are complex, they're educated, they're compassionate, they're nurturing. They, you know, I mean, I got to say, you know, they picked the great women
There's a prototype of a woman they're picking out, you know. In fact, in my first book, The Gay Husband Checklist, I have the whole list of the prototype of woman a gay man is looking for. And that's why whenever I go to one of our healing weekends, the first question I always ask, how many people in here are helpers? Either teachers, mental health workers, therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, and about 85% of the women coming there are helpers.
Yeah.
And so it was no accident that they picked us to be their wife. They wanted somebody to help them. And I'm not saying that they went into the marriage with bad thoughts and ideas. They were hoping against hope that being married to somebody who would be wonderful and kind and loving like we are would change whatever those feelings were, that they had these attractions for men. You know, in all fairness, a lot of these men don't understand. But then I tell the men, look how long it took you to learn and to understand. Why do you expect your wife should be able to do this in the next week or two? And then they pressure the women. Well, you've known now for 2 weeks. Can't you get over it? You know, they have no conception or understanding. They just want to get off to their new life, which, you know, there's some kind of disconnect there. But I do want to tell women that if I had to pick a therapist, man, I'd be going to Kathy. So if you need therapy, even if you're not in Orange County, you know, you can go to Kathy, because Kathy, you do phone and Skyping. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. And I will work even outside of California. I'll do it on a consulting basis. So I do that just for the purpose of helping people learn how to move forward. Therapy really goes delves more into like early childhood stuff and a lot of the wounding and that kind of thing. But then also there's a whole component where we just need to figure out how do we move forward. Who's been there before, and how do we make this work, right? What do I tell my kids? Practice some verb, you know, some communication skills with me, you know, sort of back things off. So, yeah, so that's kind of a new service that I've been offering, because I have had people contacting me from other parts of the country. So I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, which does give me the ability to go cross state lines with doing therapy, but I'm trying to just focus more on a consulting basis right now when it comes to out of state, because I really feel like that's more helpful in the interim. So, but yeah, and then within California, I work with people all over California. So
you were giving me a little hope there. I was going to make an appointment with you for Wednesday. That would give you 2 days to fly out here, but all right. Fine. You want to come to treat me in Philadelphia? Treat my problems, take care of my problems, but that's okay. Yeah, so let's not make Kathy travel across the country, but definitely you can do therapy with her by phone, by Skype, or if you're in California and you get to Orange County, she's there in person. That'll be your best luck, but if not, you can still have her, you know, work with you. And Kathy, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
I have a website. It's kholgeentherapy.com, or you can call me.
No, they're not going to know how to spell that. You're going to have to go letter by letter. Go ahead.
Okay, it's K Holgeen, H-O-L-G as in girl, U-I-N, therapy.com.
Or else just write to me at bondk@AOL, and I'll send you the link to Kathy's website.
Yeah.
Couldn't you get a name like, you know, Gray or White or something easy? No. You got to get a whole Gwen. All right, but that's okay. If you need help, I'll send you right directly to Kathy. But I really do appreciate you so much being here, Kathy, and I'm hoping you'll continue to do it on a kind of regular basis, because people learn so much from you. And I do want to repeat that your workshops are going to be running through March what?
Through March 17th, I believe.
Right. So even if you haven't been to one, you still have a chance that there's, you know, like two or three more that you can jump in on, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to work on getting doing a thing on YouTube and getting it online as well, so that the information can get out there. So that's in the works.
That'll be great. And so if you want to attend these workshops, they are free. And, you know, it could only help. It cannot hurt. And whatever help you can get along the way and support, you know, it's wonderful. So I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight, Kathy, and I hope that you'll come back in a couple months as a regular ongoing thing, so people just, you know, get so used to having you here, they'll be protesting when you're not. So,
And I'd love to
you know,
hear your
I think you have such great insight, and plus you're a straight wife, so you understand. And that's, I guess, what the point is that I'm making, that women who have been through this, who have lived the dynamics, there's nothing you can tell Kathy that she hasn't lived through herself. There's nothing to feel embarrassed about or ashamed about, or that somebody's not going to understand you. She'll understand you perfectly, and she'll help you get past that.
Yep, exactly.
And there's one last little request. I think on your next flyer, I think it's such a scary flyer. And you had the cow jumping over with the whale or something. Those were very frightening images to me. I didn't want to go near there.
It's supposed to be funny.
Visually, it just really shook my head apart every time I look at it. And I keep looking at it. I keep it on my desktop now. So I keep looking at this picture. I showed it to everybody. I said, "Where do you see this picture? Isn't this scary?" But I know there must be some really great significance behind it.
Yeah,
or is
it's
it
like
not
we're
just
apples
and oranges. Just supposed to be funny? Okay. Well, I kind of am a food person, so I guess I could look at the cow like that. It's a choice of meat or fish. How's that?
That works.
I can relate it just
and
to my own needs.
I really want to, and Bonnie, I want to come to Boston, so make sure you give me your dates as soon as you have them.
Philadelphia. I don't do Boston. It's too cold.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not Boston. Philadelphia. Sorry.
Although Boston's a lovely city under snow right now. I don't think it'll be ready by the time September comes along anyway. It's going to take a long time to melt. But anyway, yes, I'd love to have you come. That'd be great. Maybe you can do a workshop for the women, too.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it.
That would be awesome. All right, Kathy. Well, thanks so much, and hopefully we'll have you back here by April, catching up on what you're doing and helping women. And ladies, have a wonderful week. And don't forget, next week, Dr. Brian Hooper is going to be with us, and it's going to be at Monday, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Kathy, I love you. Thank you for being here.
I love you, too, and I love all of your women.
Yeah, all of our women. All right, good night, everyone.
That's great. Good night.